What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, that Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. You can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you.
Shout out to our friends over at Captain Beard Co. Guys, if you are looking for beard care products, shampoo, conditioner, body wash, give Captain Beard Co. a try. They have this unbelievable beard butter, balm, oils, and then it smells amazing. Ladies, if you're looking for something for your men as a gift to help with their grooming, check them out. Also, if you guys are looking to just set the mood one night, candles, unbelievably smelling candles made with all natural ingredients here locally to St. Louis. Give them a shot. Also, while you're there, use the promo code Zach and Pat for 10% off your purchase.
Hey there, guys. Really appreciate you checking out the Zach and Pat Show. If you can obviously tell, we are a newer podcast, but one way we're really trying to grow the show is trying to get up the amount of subscribers we have. So, you know, if you're watching the show and you're getting something out of it, we'd really appreciate it if you could click that subscribe button. That would help us out a ton. Please click that button. And now back to the show. We have a very special guest here today. He's a good friend of ours. He owns hand-wrapped rolling papers. He's a sales consultant at Total Roofing and the commentator for a number of MMA organizations here in Missouri.
Just about all of them.
Yeah. The great and powerful Justin Bricker.
Well, it's good to finally be here.
Yeah, glad to have you.
Had to reschedule once because got a little too overworked at the day job. Now we've got some time to sprinkle in some fun. I'm glad to be here, man.
Yeah, man.
Happy to have you.
You know, typically when I'm in front of a microphone, there's a cage and guys in their undies in front of me, not two handsome gentlemen.
Oh, well, thank you.
Well, appreciate that. Yeah.
Well, dude, I have so many things, I wanted to kind of get to today. But, first off, how I've always kind of wanted to ask, how did hand wraps come to be?
Ever since I was 15, I wanted to have like this fucking billion-dollar weed empire, and I was like, I'm gonna smoke blunts with Wiz Khalifa. I graduated 2011, so that was like prime, weed smoking era for like rap music, for our generation at least.
Yep. And the Snoop Dogg and Wiz Khalifa collab,
right? Wild and Free.
That was like our senior year or something.
Mac and Devin go to high school. Yeah, that was senior year, right?
Yep.
I remember being in Doc Moe's biology class, hitting one hitters in the bathroom and coming back to watch this. Now, at the time, we were smoking K2 because we got hair tested at CBC.
You went to CBC. I forgot about that.
What a time, right?
Yeah.
The K2 era was disgusting. But, I always wanted to have some sort of, connection in the cannabis industry. And, at one point, I was like, oh, I'm going to have my own blunts. I'm going to have my own weed strand. I'm going to have all this other stuff. And, when I had my daughter at 18, that kind of put most of my dreams of moving out west and all this stuff on hold for the time being, and just kind of, trying to figure out a way I could navigate into the market without having, $5-10 million behind me at these super mega global corps that we see now that are growing. And, I had a conversation with a guy when I was probably about 21 who told me, one of the most efficient ways to operate in business is to sell picks and axes. This is a gold rush. Everyone's going to be finding the gold. Sell the tools that these people need to find the gold, right? And so when, legalization came about in, 2019 here in Missouri, that's what I was looking for. Okay, what are my picks and axes? What are people going to need? What are people, currently doing now to consume these products that I could maybe get? Can't blow glass. Honestly, I fucking hate smoking out of glass. So, I've always been a blunt smoker, a joint smoker, or whatever. Probably hear it in my voice, but I was like sitting in my undies, middle of the pandemic, the whole fucking world shut down, and everyone's training at my house because I lived straight across the street from St. Charles MMA. So when the gym shut down, we would have like 10, 12 guys at my house. My whole basement is covered in mats, and so we had different practices going on and shit. And sometimes we're smoking like 20, 30, 40 joints a week. And, we'd be blowing through a pack of papers in like a day and a half. And I'm like, fucking tired of this shit, man. I'm like, if I had my own papers, I'd never fucking run out of papers. And my girl was like, do it. I'm like, what? She's like, start your own papers. She's like, you love rolling joints. This is all you do anyways. Everyone comes over here, brings a weed. Hey, will you roll this up for me? Can I pay you to roll joints for me? And I'm like, okay. So, you know, I'm sitting there in my undies on the couch, and, you know, we're fucking locked down basically in a snowstorm and shit. And she's, you know, sitting there cooking in the kitchen. I'm, you know, making calls to other countries in the middle of the night trying to source papers because I'm like, all right, it's got to come from somewhere. Sure. You know, and then I start watching this documentary from the guy who, you know, the founder of Raw, Josh Kesselman.
Okay.
Not exactly the biggest fan of him, but he's a fucking genius. And you can't knock the guy for the things that he's done, not only for, you know, the cannabis industry, but to like really make sure that people are, if they're operating in this space, are at least trying to do it the right way, you know, as far as testing products and all this other stuff. Now, there's a few scandals with fake charities that he set up, but that's a
different
time and place. Yeah. So, but I knew the thing I wanted the most was to make sure that they were going to be the cleanest papers sourced from real product, not floor scrappings of tree pulp from a fucking Chinese factory where there's no testing or anything, because Missouri market, we have like one of the most strict testing protocols for consumable in the dispensaries, at least. So edibles, vapes, pre-rolls, stuff like that. It has to, everything's got to meet certain requirements, right? And one of the biggest things altogether is chromium, right?
What is that?
It's just a heavy metal. Okay. Now, it's basically in everything you've ever fucking had. And the amount you need for it to be toxic to you is like almost impossible for you to consume in a lifetime. Okay. You know, unless you're just eating straight chromium for, you know, part of your diet. But for some reason, it's one of the most, you know.
It's what they're looking for.
Missouri's one of four states that even test for it. And our levels are five times higher.
And like, everybody else's?
As far as like how strict it has to be. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. So I had to find something that could do that. You know, somebody could have COAs and all these tests that were done beforehand. And man, I mean, as fast as I had the papers, they were gone. You know,
so
I,
you like ordered the first batch?
I ordered 50 and they were gone in 20 minutes.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, shit.
Cool. Yeah. And because I was telling people, hey, man, this is what I'm doing now. You know, it was one of those things like, hey, I'm going to tell people just so I force myself to do it. Because like, I feel like so much of my life has like been, you know, paralysis by analysis. Like, what's the best plan to navigate this? Instead of it's like, well, let me come up with 50 ideas and pick from those. And then we'll
one
go
of them will
there.
Work. And yeah, I'll, you know, right. And then I'll drop the other ones. And yeah.
Right. This is really the first like venture that I've had where every idea I had first, I ran. Even as far down to the name. Like,
yeah, how did the name come about? Obviously, you're a MMA fighter. You know, it makes sense.
Sense, yeah.
But.
Yeah, well, so it was really like, how do I take the two niches that I enjoy the most and make them one, right?
Love it.
But without really, you know, forcing them to be separate either, you know? Because at the end of the day, if you combine two niches, like, you're going to have to, I don't want to say pander, but you're going to have to play to one audience in most scenarios. But there is such a crossover between cannabis and martial arts and just, you know, really even an active lifestyle, which is kind of where it's started to tailor towards now. But it was really, you know, how do I bring these two things together? That's it. And, you know, I'm like, okay, well, you roll joints by hand. What else do you do? Like, I didn't want to make it like jujitsu related because I feel like that's almost even too niche.
Too
like,
niche, yeah.
You know, so it's like, okay, well, you wrap your hands in boxing, kickboxing, MMA, all these other things. It's like, okay, well, we hand roll joints. So
we're
wrapping the weed, right? Okay, yeah. Hand wraps.
Yeah,
boom, right
perfect.
There.
Yeah, you call them, you know, the hand wraps. Yeah, makes complete sense.
And I was, you know, at first I wanted the king size to be called like the knockouts, you know, like the big boys or like the heavyweights. And I'm like, you know, I think maybe now I'm going a little too far into it. But, yeah, I mean, it was really like, okay, first idea, I'm gonna fucking start a joint paper company. Okay, next idea, I got to come up with a name. All right, the two niches that I love the most, combat sports, MMA, jiu-jitsu, and cannabis. How do I make it work together? Right, because to come into the market with a new product, you have to have something different. I mean, I say it all the time, just because, you know, McDonald's makes a cheeseburger doesn't mean I can't make a good one too, but you got to be doing something different to draw the business. So like, I have this built-in audience from, you know, being a commentator and a matchmaker and coaching for the last, you know, 6 years now. And, you know, just really put put it in front of all the people that I trusted the most, and fuck, man, it blew up.
Took off.
Blew up so fast without even me really even putting a lot of effort into it. It was almost on accident where I'm like, oh, shit, I got to keep up with this.
I got something here. Yeah.
So funny story, you know, that 50 goes like in basically like 20, 30 minutes because I posted them online and boom, 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 people were buying. Also, if you listen to this, Aaron Kender, love you, my boy. He was the first one to buy a box, showed up at my house. The second they landed, gave me cash, gave me more than what I asked for, and said, I believe. So if you hear this, I love you, buddy.
That's awesome.
But so I'm like, all right, cool. I got fucking 50 off. I'm going to order 500. 500 came. They were gone within a couple days. I'm like, all right.
Damn. So are you just like selling these just like to your buddies at the gym, or do you like...
To the gym.
Do you have an online store set up as well, or are you not that far
so
yet?
I had set up the website, but I didn't understand how to like really integrate Shopify, right? With, you know, sales tax and all this other stuff. So I was like, all right, you can order everything through here, but I got to figure out the fucking back end shit. So I'm like, if you want a discount, you don't want to pay taxes on it, just pay me directly. That's kind of how I did the first few. I'm like, okay. All right, I can set this aside. Now I can at least account for the taxes myself. I'll pay it on the fucking back end, whatever. And that 500 came and went in about like probably 3 or 4 days, maybe a week at the max. And I'm like, all right, it's time to, I'm going to step this shit up. Like, I had a Facebook page or an Instagram page that got to like 700-800 followers in, you know, like 10 weeks.
Damn,
so, I mean, it's
pretty good.
It's macro scale. It's not shit.
It's small, but like that's it for anybody starting an Instagram page. Like, it takes a long fucking time to gain a following.
If there were 600 people in this building here to see me today, I'd be pretty fucking stoked.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so exactly. It's like, I always got to remember, like, that's what this is.
Dude, well, we think the same thing with this show. It's like, you know, we look at some things that we get, you know, 40 views, and it's like, dude, you know, it's not nothing. Like, if I stood up in front of a group of 40 people, like, it'd be, that's a lot. It's a big room, you know, like, it's a big room of people. And, you know, that's something I got to always remember and remind myself of when I look at these other podcasts that are, you know, getting hundreds of thousands of views. And it's like, okay, well, you know, we're not there yet.
Right.
Know? But like, you know, 5 to 10 years from now, we keep up with it. You know, who knows? We might get there.
Sure.
And if we don't, it's not, we do it just because we enjoy it, you know? So.
Right.
And you get to sit down with awesome people like you and our other guests, like, just to hear your stories and because everybody has a unique story,
right?
It's just our, you know, for us, how do we get it out of them?
And if this, all this ever becomes is like a fun hobby you have with your buds and you get to do cool shit, like, what else do we need as adults, right?
Right,
like,
right, exactly.
You know? That's all it needs to be.
So I'm like, all right, I really got to fucking, I'm going to ramp this shit up. You know, I ordered 500 this time. I'm going to order 3,000 next time. Everything came.
No.
Everything came wrong. The boxes were wrong. The fucking booklets were printed the opposite direction. So instead of opening left to right, they opened right to left. Like, it was all fucked up.
Well, do you go back to the manufacturer on that and be like, hey, listen, this is a fucked up order that you sent me.
Yep.
I want a new one.
Yep. And they made it right.
Okay.
But then it got hung up in customs for about 4 months.
Oh, shit.
Oh, it was awful. It was awful. Because, you know, it went from France to a shipping port in Germany and then to another place. And then it hit New York and got hung up in customs there. And no one made me aware of it. So I'm just like waiting. And I finally get a hold of my manufacturer and they're like, yeah, man, we're trying to get on this now. We're made aware of it this week, blah, 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 blah. They were trying to charge me $25 a day plus 10 cents a pound for every package that I had for every day that they held it because they needed EIN and a few other things to import. No one reached out to me. No one did anything. And
you just were racking up money.
Yeah. And I'm out product.
Right.
Well, at least product that I could sell.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was there's all these, I got to be careful with my words. The correct term to use is legacy market. Okay. So people with a medical license or local growers or whatever, they put on like swap meets essentially. And, you know, some people do it the right way where, hey, you can buy tickets and these tickets are redeemable for whatever items are on at someone's table. And that's on you guys. I've been to one. it's ones where there's people just there's this is a straight just open air drug market. And I've walked in, I'm like, yep, I'm out of here. But I showed up to a few of these and just gave out papers. And I had papers I had, but I couldn't sell. So it's like,
oh, the fucked up ones?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's like, you know, there's no retail boxes for them. They're just blank white boxes, but the booklets are okay. The paper's still okay. Right. They're just printed just, backwards.
They're not on the right.
Yeah.
They don't display properly.
Right. But I could give them out.
Sure.
People can use them. So I went to at least two events a month or
three like months. Cannabis friendly mm-hmm. events or whatever they
yep.
are. Okay.
Yep. And just gave out papers. Didn't charge a dime, nothing. Just gave every single one out to every single one that I went to. I did that for about 4 months. And then after that, it just.
Well, yeah, dude. Because, I mean, people, you just giving shit away for free.
Yeah.
People love that.
People love that. And you were familiar with the brand Cookies?
Yes.
Okay. So Burner, the guy who like started Cookies, he said he gave away $3.7 million worth of merch in the first 5 years.
Wow.
But I mean, that's arguably one of the biggest cannabis brands out there.
Oh, probably the biggest.
I know, because like I know Wiz Khalifa's got a stream mm-hmm. with them, mm-hmm. and there's a couple other like celebrity, you know.
They invented the term like rapper weed, you
yes.
know, mm-hmm. shit like yeah. that. But you know, Burner did $3.7 million in 5 years in free merch because.
Now, is Burner the, is that the rapper Burner?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
He started Cookies? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, there's some debate on that, but okay. yes, he is. The head of Cookies and the face of it all for sure. But, you know, so I kind of took that model like, well, I can't give this stuff. I mean, I can't sell this stuff. I can't just sit on it either.
Right.
And these guys are making it right. So I'm going to have product eventually. And then it became like this, you know, oh man, I'm out. You're just going to have to pre-order. And pre-orders came in. Pre-orders came in. And then, you know, I didn't even approach a dispensary or a store or anything for like 6 months.
Okay.
Just because one.
You didn't need to?
I didn't really need to. I didn't have the volume, I thought at least, to compete with the margins that they were getting from these big distributors. So it's like, you know, either you infiltrate the market and you know, these people trying to sell the products come to you, or you try to do it vice versa, right? Which these guys get people try to sell them shit all the time, you know? But if I can sell direct to your customers, and then your customers are coming to you and saying, hey, do you guys carry hand wraps here?
Yeah.
Right? That was what got it the most, was people would come in, oh, do you guys carry hand wraps? Hey, I got these at some event. I really liked them. You guys have these here? Because, you know, on every single pack, my IG, the website, everything's on the very back. And so they could give it to this person or they could take a picture of it. And you know, the amount of sales I did through Instagram to multi-million dollar dispensary chains is ridiculous.
Really?
Yeah. So yeah. I mean, it just goes to show you like any medium you can communicate with someone, right. You can create a sale.
Now, do you think they had the mess up just because of how much you ordered? Or do you think you just shit luck?
No, I think if anything, it's just, at the end of the day, like, one, no one's fucking perfect, especially right. in a giant operation where.
Well, do you think it got held up at customs too, just because it was such a large order?
It got held up at customs because of it was a certain dollar amount, and they didn't have the information they needed to clear it all.
Gotcha.
Didn't right? have anything to do with it being cannabis related product. I mean,
well, so technically, it's not a cannabis related, yeah, right?
But it could be for-
at the time, it was I mean, legally, it still is a hemp related product. Right.
Yeah.
Because I was only doing hemp papers at the time, and now I've moved on to rice papers as well. But because of the 2018 Farm Bill Act, you know, you could import and export hemp without any sort of like extra tax or tobacco tax. And now rolling papers are technically classified as a tobacco item, or like an OTP and other tobacco product is like what they file it as tax wise. But, there was a loophole at the time where, well, this is a hemp item. Don't say anything specifically about hemp rolling paper, just rolling paper. So I was able to import everything without any sort of
issue
other than I didn't fucking supply my EIN and a few things. Which now,
you know, rookie mistakes.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, you don't know what you don't know, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So
you learned and now it won't happen again.
And they took care of me all the way through. My supplier never once dropped the ball on me on that point. You know, obviously they were trying to make it right because they fucked up, you know, but at the end of the day, it's probably the best case scenario for me because I didn't have this like looming pressure. It was early on and I didn't have this looming pressure of like, oh my God, I have to get rid of all of this stuff to make my money back. Because one, they matched my order for free, you know, because they messed it up. And now I have this. Well,
it kind of ended up being a blessing in disguise for
us. Right. Completely. You know? Completely.
Like, you know? You had an opportunity to kind of basically get all this free product that, yes, it was a fucked up package, but the product itself was the same. So you could just go around and give those out.
And like, as many as I gave away, I don't know if more than three people even said something about them being the opposite direction.
Yeah, that's probably something you noticed. You know,
right away, like, yeah, you know, it's like
how often
they probably smoked and were really high, like, whoa, this is cool.
Am I looking at this backwards? What the fuck?
This is some great weed and some awesome rolling paper.
But, yeah, dude, incredible, man. So
yeah, man. So now it's a little over 100 locations across the Midwest.
Oh, dude, I didn't realize it was
that's
that
incredible,
many.
Man.
Holy
that's
shit,
awesome.
Yeah. Where I'm working on a few like bigger distribution deals because like my number one fear. Yeah. Outside of failing, is scaling too fast, you know?
Sure.
Because I've seen a lot of people try to scale too fast and put the cart before the horse, and next thing you know, you're completely off the rails. And now I'm at a point, you know, where I'm comfortable with the supply chain that I have, getting things in, and really being able to scale it to the next level and understanding the market was what I had to spend most of this time doing. Because I went into this shit blind, you know? Outside of a couple buddies who I know that work at smoke shops and stuff like that, like, you know, all the market research I had was on my own. On like, oh, own. Yeah, I'm going to buy this fucking box of rolling paper from another smoke shop and try and get a fucking price from whoever the store owner is or the manager at the time. Hey, I don't care what the markup is. Just what do you guys pay for these? You know, just trying to do that. I finally had a guy just, hey, man, we have this book you can order stuff from. Why don't you just take this? Yeah.
So that's how you found the supplier?
No. This is just how I found the pricing.
Oh, I see. Okay.
The supplier, everything, all that I did on my own.
Okay.
You know, and the margins that I was getting were okay, you know, but just my volume wasn't there to compete with some big dogs, you know, like, or even if I wanted to get, you know, distribution in, you know, 50 to 100 stores, like say QT, for example, right?
Yeah.
Like, your margins got to be
thin.
Thin. Real thin. And I know that because, you know, before jiu-jitsu, before any of this stuff, I was a national accounts manager for a produce brokerage firm based out of Salinas, California. So I had like 118 accounts across the Midwest, six states, like, and some of my bigger customers were Walmart, Costco, and Sam's. And I mean, the volume that those guys buy is insane, but the margins are so razor thin that
it doesn't make sense to even put it in there.
Well, it does because it allows you to operate at a higher margin with other customers, right? Smaller customers, because obviously the more you're producing, you know, the more your margins can be in a sense, right? Right. So
they're thinner, but there's so much of them that's bigger.
Right. So. Well, it allows you to operate a little more freely with these other accounts. You know, like if I have one person guaranteed to take, you know, 1,000 boxes, but I have 500. Okay, cool. These are already accounted for. How can I maximize my margins on these, on the other, right? So, and I knew to compete with the big dogs, you know, or even at the dispensary level where, you know, at the end of the day, it's a fucking business. Like they're here to make money. And so am I. So I, my best route was going direct to consumer right away. And it leaned into them coming to me and then the margins mattered less because now they're coming.
Well, and then you have raving fans of your product.
Right.
You know, which is great. Right.
It's I got people coming into their stores asking for my stuff. So.
Yeah, it's a great thing to have, for sure.
For sure. So how many on average, I guess, I mean, you're working in per month, what you're selling per month over mm-hmm. the course of all those. On average, how many boxes per month are you?
So typically I go by cases because, you know, like there's 50 in a master case of king size, 40 in a master case. I'm sorry, 40 in a master case of king size, 50 in a master case of regular, so I'm going about five cases a month.
Okay.
You know, it's man, it's really starting to fucking pick up, man. And a lot of it, like I said, is still direct to consumer. You know, it's a little bit slower at the retail level because they have so many other products to push as well. And, you know, I'm not the only rolling paper on the market.
Oh,
you know, and just like energy drinks, just like soda, everyone's got their fucking preference, you know, and how hard it is to convert someone without giving it to them for free. It'd be tough, you know, even if it's $2.50,
right? Yeah,
you know, for an extra $2.50, hey, you can try these new products that are local. Oh, yeah, I'm good. I'll take the $3.50 raws that I know I like. Yeah,
the ones that I've used forever.
Right, right. Hey, and it is what it is, you know, like not everyone's going to like Sprite. Not everyone's going to like Elements, you know, like, okay, that doesn't mean there's not a place, right?
So how did you go about finding the supplier?
Fucking Google, man.
Just Googling, is that day one supplier? You still the
same one? Same one, nothing's changed, yeah. You know, now I went through about 20 different people testing samples and, you know, trying to get COAs and talk to someone who, you know, spoke like decent English. Where's the supplier? Out of France.
Out of France, okay.
Yep. Yeah. Well, it's one of the older paper mills.
Yeah, I was going to say.
No thing.
Stick some peanut butter to the top of your mouth.
I'm too busy studying Portuguese right now.
Oh, yeah, because your wife's Brazilian, right?
Yeah. We're going to spend 2 weeks there this summer.
Sweet. That's awesome.
Yeah, we're going to go back for her birthday. It'll be the first time she's been back in 5 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
So we're going to go back for her birthday, scout some second wedding locations. And
sweet.
We'll go back next year for a month.
I've always wanted to go. Go to the Mecca.
Right. Well, so sure. we're gonna go look at some property while we're out there too.
Cool. Does she do jujitsu as well?
Nope. Okay. She's a fucking beast though, bro. She speaks 3 languages. She's getting her master's degree in finance right now. She cooks and cleans for fun.
Oh.
Okay. You know, like I'll get home. She's like, I need to relax. I'm gonna go clean the kitchen.
Right.
Okay, love you. Want some help? Yeah. No, get out of my way. Okay, love you more.
Yeah.
Does she cook you traditional Brazilian dishes and things like that?
Always. I'm the real gringo poppy. Don't get that twisted.
I love that.
That's awesome.
we eat a lot of fucking feijoada in the house. And she'll kill me for saying this, but it's like Brazilian chili.
Okay.
Black beans, every fucking cut of pork you could ever imagine, bacon, carne seca, all kinds. Oh man,
that sounds insane. Amazing. Yeah, that sounds
change your life. Yeah.
Oh, one thing I wanted to ask. So you know, you sell rice papers and hemp papers. Like, I mean, other than the color, what's the big difference?
Honestly, I mean, you know, hemp paper is hemp, right? It's made from a hemp pulp. Rice paper, you know, contrary to popular belief in the cannabis community, is not made from rice. Now, there was one company that did that. They don't do it anymore, though, even though they still say, like, true rice paper on their packaging. It's like, you guys stopped doing that, like, fucking 35 years ago. But it's just a thinner wood pulp.
Okay.
You know? It's just beat down and dried out and pulled thinner and thinner and thinner until, like, you can almost see all the way through it when you hold it up to the light.
Mm-hmm. Now, does one do better than the other?
It's more preference. You know, Zach and I were kind of talking about this the other day. You know, the hemp papers definitely are stronger. You know, they're a little bit more malleable. Rice papers are thinner. If you want to get, you know, into the weeds, they're about 1.5 micrograms thinner.
Into the weeds.
Right? So it's really about preference. Like, right now, people are starting to migrate further away from the hemp papers. One, because they're thinner, and two, because hemp is one of the most bioavailable products like in the world.
It's like a super plant.
They're taking hemp plants right now and implanting them in the ground at Chernobyl to help suck up the radiation.
Oh wow!
Right.
Well, and if you ever like feel like hemp, it's like really light but like super durable, and it's like. And you can be so versatile, like you can make paper with it. I mean, the Constitution is written on hemp paper.
Have you seen
hemp parchment?
Hemp concrete?
Yeah, I've heard about it.
It's insane.
Really?
It's like crazy strong.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like it's like 4 times as strong as like regular concrete, supposedly.
Shit, they need to start putting that down on the streets of St. Louis.
Yeah.
Get rid of these fucking potholes.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Literally on this past weekend when we did the fight campaign, Arion on his way here, you know, hit a pothole and blew a tire out.
And especially after the snow.
When all the plows driving over it. Yeah.
Well, and the salt just eating at it.
That, and then, you know, when it starts to melt, it goes down, but then it refreezes. Where does it go? It just expands.
Yeah.
It just expands. It keeps getting worse and worse and worse and worse. Drives me absolutely nuts.
That's crazy. Hemp concrete.
Yeah, hemp concrete. Oh, I mean, they make hemp protein powder. I mean, there's hemp, like, fucking everywhere.
Everywhere.
I mean, you can, it's, like, such a versatile product, and for a long time, it was illegal to import. What you said, 2018 mm-hmm. is when they stopped that. It was like you had to go through all of these, like, I mean, just to sell any sort of hemp product, it was like very, very difficult. And this all had to do with the guy's name. You know, I've heard Rogan talk about it several times, but it's the guy from, you know what I'm talking about.
Yes.
The whole reason that hemp became illegal was because of, it was the paper industry, and because hemp was their preferred way to use paper. I mean, because it's way more durable, easier to make, easier to grow. But
it's way more efficient to grow.
Yes. And they made this thing called the decorticator, where it made hemp very easy to process. And when that came out, this guy, God, I can't remember his fucking name, but he's the, he had a, his business was paper, and he was the guy that was responsible for, starting like the reefer madness videos. If you ever seen any of like all that propaganda that basically made, you know, they said that and that's how they came up with the name marijuana, which marijuana is it's like a Spanish term for like a wild tobacco.
Wait, you mean it's not like Pineapple Express where they sat down in the basement and got really, really high and they're like, this is illegal.
No, supposedly not. But yeah,
they did that with acid.
Okay.
But yeah, that's essentially, but he did like a campaign to make hemp illegal so that it wouldn't ruin his paper industry. And then that
makes you crazy. It makes white women love black guys.
Right. Yeah. They said it was like a Mexican and black men. It caused
caused them to be violent and white women to love them. So it's
right.
Like, this is 1923. Yeah. We got to get them all out of here.
Yeah.
Women.
Yeah. We can't have this crazy Mexican tobacco or whatever.
And this was just how long ago with this was going on?
I think in the early 20s.
Yeah. About 100 years ago.
Yeah. Oh, wow. So, and then, I mean, here we are 100 years later and it's finally getting reversed.
Back on track, brother.
I mean, but federally it's still illegal. You know, so.
You know. Yeah. And I feel some type of way about federal legalization. You know, if we're trying to keep monopolies out of cannabis, that's going to be the fastest way to create them. You know,
sure.
How long do you think Johnson & Johnson be out of the cannabis game if it goes federally legal?
Yeah. I mean, because it's more expensive than gold per pound.
Hmm?
Marijuana is.
Well, depending on the market.
Sure.
Depending on the I find some cheap pounds.
Yeah.
Find some cheap
but
pounds.
I mean, it's very, I mean, for something that you can grow, it's very, I mean, very profitable.
Oh, shit. Let's take the dollar, you know, the dollar's taken away from the gold standard. Let's take it back to the weed standard.
Let's put it on the hemp standard, baby. Let's do it. Sign me up.
Yeah.
It's just, it's crazy, man.
That is crazy.
Yeah. So, Justin, how'd you get into martial arts originally?
It's honestly, it's something, you know, I always wanted to do my entire life. Like, ever since I fucking woke up on a Saturday morning and watched Three Ninjas for the first time, you know, my first sentence was go, go Power Rangers. Like, it's just, it's always been such a giant fascination to me.
Which one was your favorite?
Oh, Rocky, of course. Yeah. what do you mean? So it was always a giant obsession and fascination of mine through my whole life. And I mean, I don't know if you guys listened to the podcast I did with Arion, and I haven't really talked about it like publicly much. And, you know, guys that I train with and stuff know, but since I was 8 years old, I've been dealing with reoccurring inner ear tumors called cholesteatoma. And it basically gives me debilitating vertigo. I get super sick and vomit. A lot of it is brought on by like an extended heart rate. So from 8 until 19, I had 2 surgeries a year, every year. One to scope out the tumor, one to, like, essentially what they do, it would go in and check to make sure that they got everything. And then they would have to resurface my ear canal or put in artificial hearing bone. Yeah. So I basically got, like, one season a year to play sports when the rest of the year I was, like, recovered. I couldn't have heart rate over, you know, 150 or anything for more than 5 minutes. Like, all kinds of stuff, because I had stitches in my ear, and I didn't know this until I was older, but I guess the way your blood pressure is regulated in your head is different than the rest of your body, right? That's,
I didn't
know. Me neither. But if you have, that's how your face gets really red when you're working out or, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
Mine does.
Sure.
Tomato face, bad. I've faced the color of your shirt.
But a lot of it is your blood pressure rising, right? Okay. Or, you know, your blood circulating, not so much your blood pressure, but it would cause the stitches to burst, give me vertigo, cause me to pass out, cause me sick, all kinds of shit. And so when I finally got, you know, on my own, I'm like, I think I'm going to give this a try. And I was always too scared. And my best friend, Brian, he's a black belt under Zach Cummings now. He lives out in Kansas City. He started training under Jermaine Andre. I don't know if Jermaine is. That's a guy in this community who gets overshadowed a lot because he's a wild, wild character. He's a real OG. Talk to Mike Rogers. You talk to Steve Berger. They'll tell you, yeah, Jermaine's crazy as hell. I mean, he's a legend. Like, as far as, like, early MMA and, you know, guys in the area, someone you guys should talk to. He's got insane stories. But Brian was training under Jermaine and, you know, moved to Kansas City and started training under Zach and was getting ready for his first MMA fight. And I went out there and basically, you know, I was watching, you know, watching him get ready and stuff. And Zach came up, hey man, doing watching Brian train, get ready. He's like, yeah, there's class going on. I'm like, yeah, I know. He's like, well, Brian told me you want to do jiu-jitsu, go do jiu-jitsu. You know, just kind of like put my feet to the fire. And I'm like, okay. I was like, all right, well, I don't have a gi. He's like, yeah, I got one. You know, everything I had, he's like, yeah, go ahead. And then so I would do jiu-jitsu, you know, kind of sporadically when I'd come to town. And I told the guys, like, oh, yeah, I'm training back home. Yeah. Bro. You know, like, I was just too nervous. Like, dude, I went to St. Charles MMA 4 times and sat in the parking lot 10 minutes early. Like, all right, I'm going to go in. I'm going to talk to someone. Watch people walk in. Stayed there long enough. Watch them the fuck. Same people walk out. Just could not.
Get up to do it.
Could not get up to fucking do it.
It's terrible.
Now, was that more because of what was going on with the ear, or is it just more?
It was more me, like my ego, you know, like, oh, what if I get beat up? What if someone tries to hurt me? What if they don't like me? What if it's too hard? Am I going to be a bitch? Like, you know, like,
all these things.
And, you know, I'm 22 years old at the time, 22. And so then I go to Kansas City and, mind you, all this is after, like, the worst fucking breakup I've ever had in my life, too. And
aren't they all at that age?
For sure. For sure. You know, we live together. All kinds of shit. And Brian was like, look, man, I'm tired of hearing about your shit. You fucking need jiu-jitsu. You just need jiu-jitsu. He was like, I'm buying you a gi. All right, whatever. I didn't think nothing about it. And I go home. And a couple days later, I get home from work. And there's a fucking gi sitting on my porch. A blue King's gi in a bag. Yeah,
with, like, a white belt.
Yep. And I fucking went to one class.
St. Charles MMA?
Yep. Finally went inside. Matt Rice House was teaching, and I talked to him, and I was like, you know, I don't know if I want to try the class today, but I'm okay to sit and watch. And he's like, yeah, man, you do whatever you want. You'll probably get a better idea if you want to do the class, or what you want to do if you do the class. So I was like, still too nervous, you know? Sure. Sat there, watched the whole class, and go, all right, bet, I'm in. I could do this. Go to the gym the next day. I'm getting back in shape. Yeah. I'm going to do jiu-jitsu. Fucking put 225 on the squat rack. Tear my fucking hip. Not completely, thank God.
Oh, that sounds awful.
It was horrendous. It's horrendous, especially because I didn't have great insurance either. And so it was basically just like, yeah, figure it the fuck out. So my hip still clicks, like, horrendously.
Oh, man.
Yeah. But, so I went out to Kansas City, and Zach was like, hey, man, what are you doing, jiu-jitsu? Like, I'm like, yeah, well, you know, I've been in a couple times. You know, Brian got me the gi, and I hurt my leg. And he's like, look, go to St. Charles MMA. Tell him I sent you. Zach used to do, like, all of his training camps there when he's in college and stuff. And he's like, go there. Tell Mike Rogers you know me and that I sent you. And he goes, don't come back here. You don't. You know, basically like, hey man, I love you, but quit fucking around.
Yeah, you know? Do it or don't.
Yeah.
And shit, so, get off the pot.
Right. And so I went out, finally I talked to Mike and I signed me and my daughter up in the same day. So I'm like, all right, I need accountability, buddy. Yeah. You know? So she did jiu-jitsu and I was like still too nervous to do jiu-jitsu. I think I was like, looking back on it, like I was just afraid to lose more than anything. So I was like, I only did kickboxing for like 2 months, maybe 3 months when I first started there. because it was like, oh, this is my excuse. It's the same time as the kids' jiu-jitsu class, you know? Yeah. So my daughter's over there, I'm over here. And then, you know, one day I seen that they were kind of down coaches. And I was like, I asked the coach, like, hey, I don't know anything, but like, if you need someone to like tell kids to go point and stand, like, just let me know. And Tracy was like, Tracy Taylor, he's like, hey man, I really appreciate it, but I can't have a coach out here who doesn't know jiu-jitsu. He's like, but your daughter's doing good, so you can't let her know more jiu-jitsu than you.
Good. That's a good point.
Man. Yeah. And he's like, why don't you come to my class Sunday? He's like, we start at 9, we go till about noon.
Damn.
Yeah. Yeah.
Damn.
Yeah. Well, he called it Sunday school. He's like, it's all the dads. He's like, we're not out here trying to kill each other. He's like, we're going to come here. You're going to talk about jiu-jitsu. You're going to learn about life and how these things relate to each other. He's like, all the other stuff like that, you know, comes along with this place, you'll find it. He's like, just come to this class. Okay. And so for like maybe 2 or 3 Sundays in a row, I went to his class. I'm like, all right, I think I really need to fucking give this a try. And so I completely stopped doing all striking classes, did all jiu-jitsu, nothing else. And then about 7 months later, I quit my job. And,
and you really could train jiu-jitsu.
Well, I was living so far below my means to what I was making at the time. Like, all in, dude, my bills were like $1,100 a month.
Oh, wow.
I had fucking nothing. You know, I had the cheapest apartment I could find in Wentzville. I had a fucking cell phone bill. I had no car payment, you know? So I saved up enough money to live and pay like all of my bills plus live for like 3 years.
Wow. That's incredible.
So it's like, all right, I'm going to fucking take this. Like, I really fucking enjoy. I really fucking love this. Like, we have some cool stuff going on. I got this new like community at the gym that I feel like I'm really a part of now, because like, once I got over my own ego, like, I mean, you know how just being a part of any team, right? Yeah. Being a part of any team, like, especially if you've been an athlete your whole life, is the best part of your fucking day.
It's the best part of it. Yeah.
It's the best part of the day. I mean, you're playing baseball your whole life. Like, the game's fun, dude. Being in the dugout with the boys.
Yeah. Locker room.
Yeah. Locker room, dugout, so fucking everything, yeah, man. Like, that's where some of the best times I've ever had in my life are. Just
bullshitting in the locker room after a hard jiu-jitsu class. Like, I've never laughed harder sometimes than
I say it all the time.
Each other shit.
The most important thing to the success of a jiu-jitsu academy is how much time you see the guys spending on the mats after class is over. How many guys are lined up on the wall like this?
And chatting. And just chatting. Giving each other shit. Yep. And like, you know, dude, some of my favorite conversations and best times I've ever had have been like when I'm completely drenched in sweat, propped up against the wall, sitting there talking to my boys, or even a guy that I don't know that well, but like, man, I've really got to know this guy today. Because like, I got to fucking see him in his most vulnerable point, you know, where he's got a guy on top of him choking him, and like, you know, it's like he doesn't get more real than that.
Right. And
it's awesome.
And so, you know, I have this like new community that I'm like, you know, in reality, it's like all I ever wanted was to be a part of a team that I love, that I felt valued in, and that, you know, was something that I actually love. You know, it wasn't like I was enamored by this new shiny toy. It's like, no, this is something I've wanted to do since I was fucking 8 years old. I was just never allowed to. And now it's like, this is everything I thought it was going to be and more. And now I'm an adult and I can like, oh shit, I can maybe make like a lane for myself in this to where this could be my life, you know? Cause I was selling produce and I fucking wanted to blow my brains out. I was on the road like 16 days out of the month sometimes. And, geez, you know, in Mount Olive, Mississippi and fucking, you know, weird backwoods places in Louisiana and, you know,
and that time away from your daughter, I'm sure that's
exactly. Yeah. And, you know, my dad, he still to this day is gone like 40, 45 weeks out of the year for work, whether that doesn't include his vacation time.
What does he do?
So now he's the VP of sales for a company called Green Gate Fresh out of Salinas, California. So I started working in produce for one of his buddies selling fucking sliced apples and bagged grapes to prisons, school districts, you know, restaurants with their kids' menus and shit. And that was it. And then like about a year and a half in, my dad and a couple of his buddies started a brokerage group that absorbed the company that I was working for. And I ended up working for my fucking dad for like 2 years. That was even worse. That was the worst part of all of it. You know, it was like, because now I'm, you know, I'm my dad's kid, so I'm held to a higher standard. But I'm also my dad's kid. It's like, hey, you're 22 years old. I'm not going to pay you the same as I'm paying everyone else. You gotta earn your keep around here, boy.
Yeah.
You know, which, I mean, it taught me to grind.
Sure.
You know, look, at the time, it was fucking miserable. Looking back at it, 31, I can say, like, that set me up so much further than I imagined it would have, just in the understanding of business at a, you know, even a macro sense, right? Like, knowing how to operate where I could with hand wraps and where I should go, yada, yada, yada. But I just could not see myself getting stuck in that cycle. Because I remember calling my dad, hey, Pop, you going to come to my game today? Nope, not going to be home. And then the first time my daughter called me and was like, hey, Dad, are you coming to my soccer practice tonight? I'm in fucking Nebraska, you know? And she's crying, doesn't understand. And it's like,
breaks your heart.
What, and because I just go right back to that moment myself.
Yeah, because you saw yourself there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I was that. I
felt that before.
All the time. You know, it's like my dad's on the road. My mom's a real estate agent, so she's working, you know, at all crazy hours, you know? So it's like, I didn't want her to feel what I felt and miss out on all that stuff, you know? So I'm like, all right, I'm in an opportunity right now. I have all this money saved up. I live super, you know, below my means. I have a few opportunities that I've created on myself, like in, you know, the gym and the community and whatnot. I'm like, I think if I really put everything I have into this, it could be something. I don't know what it is, but it could be something, you know, and it's spawned into infinitely more things than I ever thought it would imagine. Commentary, the matchmaking, fucking hand wraps, like,
yeah,
all of it is all because my boy Brian bought me a gi and Zach Cummings told me to stop being a bitch.
That's, you
know,
awesome.
Yeah, so you know, cool. That's why it's so important to have good people in your life, man.
Dude, it is. So, one of the most important.
And yeah. So how long have you been doing jiu-jitsu now?
It'll be 8 years in June.
Okay.
Yeah.
What level are you?
I am a 4-stripe blue belt. Nice. So I took off.
Been a blue belt for a hot minute, though.
I've been a blue belt for about 5 years, yeah. So I took off the gi for like 2.5 years completely. Like, didn't even really touch it other than like a holiday open mat, a Christmas open mat, or a Thanksgiving or something like that. And a lot of people are still like super traditional in the sense of, like, if you don't wear the gi, I can't promote you in a belt, you know, which it is what it is, you know. Like, I don't have any shame showing up to a gym. You know, I've been training 8 years with a 4-stripe belt.
Yeah.
I'm like, we can roll. Yeah. You tell me what you think I am.
Right? Yeah, the belt doesn't always mean everything. I mean, it really doesn't.
No, because I rolled with black belts when I was a blue belt. And I'm not shit, all things considered. But when I was a fresh blue belt, there was black belts that I'd be. Like, guys that were fighting. But it's like, you don't deserve this belt. You don't deserve what this symbolizes, at least, you know. That's why I just, once like I started really seeing that, I'm like, oh, these belts don't matter whatsoever. Why do I need to wear the gi? You know?
I enjoy both.
I'm coming back around to it. I put the gi on more in the last 6 months than I probably have in the last 4 years.
Really?
Yeah. I even bought a new gi.
Where have you been training lately?
I've been training a ton at Gracie Amida and at Wolves Den as well, and then mostly at my house. So okay. My basement is fucking a full gym. I got a 10x10, and then I got all kinds of puzzle mats, and I got a full gym in my garage. So we'll have like 6-7 guys at the house sometimes. It's just not enough space,
yeah,
you know, for us to get real crazy. But a lot of time at Wolves Den, mainly at Gracie Amida, but okay. A lot of that's in the gi. So I just train where I can.
Yeah.
So you prefer no gi?
Always.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, you eventually started coaching at St. Charles MMA, right?
Yeah. So, and you know, like, goes back to like, all right, how do I find my way in this, right? I knew that if I wasn't like forcing myself to train and be at these places, it just wasn't going to happen, right? And sometimes you show up and there's not people there just like, hey, I can pull you aside. You want to come do some, you know, back escapes for an hour, right? So during MMA practice, there was nothing going on the other side of the room. And so after like, I don't know, maybe 9-10 months of training, I asked Roger, I was like, hey, you know, I've been helping out with kids' class and stuff, and you know, I want to get some extra rounds in, but you know, when I'm here, there's nothing else going on. Would you be opposed to me posting in the Facebook every day, like the Facebook group, about us doing positional rounds in the other room? No, man, that'd be great. And so I just say, hey, 4:30 positional sparring. We're going to work, you know, back mount, side control, half guard, whatever. We're just going to rotate, go live from positions for 2 minutes.
Best way to train.
Me too. Me too. Actually, I'll take that back. Depending on who you're training with.
Yeah, of course. But you know, I like, you know, starting with a handicap, you know, and that way you're forcefully putting yourself in a bad position.
Right.
To get better at getting out.
And that was, you know, that was one thing that Tracy told me. Like, hey, man, like, I know a lot of this first, like, year or so is just trying to survive. But you also don't, like, when a live role, you don't want to be like, oh, I don't want to put myself in a bad position. It's like, can't survive if you don't even know what to do when you get there.
Right.
So, okay, well.
And it takes out some of that pressure of losing. You know, you can kind of always look at it, well, I started from a shitty position.
Right,
you know,
right. Like, it's like that constraints method.
Yeah, like if someone's starting on my back and he gets me, like I don't feel as bad than if we start from the feet and he gets me, you know?
Right. It's not real, damn it.
Yeah.
But so, no, I started doing like this 4:30 positional sparring, and then it turned into like sometimes 20 people would be there. And then, you know, eventually someone's like, hey, how do I get out of this? This is what I do. You know, I don't know if this is right. Then I'd have someone come over and ask. And then I really got heavy into the instructionals and studying, like, not just like watching people compete, but actually studying the instructionals and the why and the how and everything. And you know, about a year and a half in, I had my own class.
Wow.
You know? And I'll never say I'm like the best jiu-jitsu guy in the world, but I know a lot about jiu-jitsu and I love jiu-jitsu. I love to talk and I love to teach. So it's like there was a gap that needed to be filled. And I just so happened to slide in there at the right place and right time. And, you know, I started that 4:30 positional class. I taught that for like 2 years. And then I taught the 6 a.m. classes that they had, you know, gi and no gi. And then I started teaching Tuesdays and Thursdays at 10:30. And then Tuesdays and Thursdays at 7 o'clock at Kirk's. Like I was teaching all over the place, like as much as I could, just because, like, you know, competing for me is tough with my ear issues, you know, because like,
do you still have the issues with the ear?
I just had a CT done a couple of weeks ago. I have another tumor right now. So my last one was removed in 2023. I had hand surgery. I had a bone tumor removed. It just came up out of nowhere. Me and my buddy Tyler, we were doing back escape drills for like 2 hours.
Just not like, non-cancerous?
Nope, non-cancerous. Well, they told me that it was possibly bone cancer, and so I had to sit on that for a week.
Oh,
that
shit.
Was horrible.
Jesus.
Yeah. But so we were just doing like back escape drills one day and working on controlling the hands. And the next day I woke up and there was like this giant fucking like titty on my hand, and I couldn't close it all the way. Like my pinky would do this. I went to 5 different doctors. No one could tell me what it was. Not one fucking person until they cut it out and looked at it. Yep. Bone tumor.
Just like sprouted up overnight.
Overnight. And then for like 8 months, I dealt with it while I was trying to get fucking
the surgery.
Out. Well, just trying to get out, like, because they were like, oh, we could probably pop it. Oh, it's probably a Bible bump or whatever the hell they call it, a ganglion cyst. And they started, nope, can't drain that. You know, it was like an actual growth. And so I had hand surgery in January of 2023, and then like 20 days later, I had another surgery on my ear to get the tumor cut out. Oh, dude, it's been a nightmare. So what they were supposed to do was go in, cut this tumor out, and then now they're able to, like, supposedly put in that artificial, like, hearing bone that I need in the same surgery. Well, the last one I had, I was 19, and it was for them to scope it out, put in this artificial hearing bone. Well, when they went in this last time, they scoped everything out and found that old prosthetic hearing bone that my body had rejected, and it had fallen back and all this skin grew over it. So instead of removing it, they cut it out, reshaped it, and tried to put it back in place instead of giving me a new one. So
why would they want to put something that was already rejected by your body back into your body.
Exactly. And so
now let's try this again. Yeah. See if it works better this time.
Oh, so for 2 years I've been dealing with my ear constantly bleeding. Okay. So, and I'll show you a picture if you want to see it. The prosthetic actually fell out around Thanksgiving.
Holy shit.
I've been having so many issues for the last 2 years, and they were telling me, oh, it's this, it's that, it's this, it's that.
And there's no permanent solution to either stop the tumors from coming back or...
The closest thing they can do is remove my ear canal wall to help it drain more efficiently. But even then, that's like a...
Maybe.
Yeah.
So...
Awful.
But so this prosthetic, the only way I can describe it is it looks like it looked like an arrowhead, like pointy as fuck, and it was crashing into the opposite side of my ear canal, constantly cutting it open. It would be bleeding and getting infected. It was causing like my lymph nodes to get swollen. It was causing infections in my nerves. Like I was having like, remember I told you I was having those neck issues?
Yeah.
Since this prosthetic has fallen out, nothing. I have all the feeling back in my fingers. No neck issues. I mean, I wasn't.
And do you need it? I mean, does it make it? I mean, is it hard to hear without it?
It makes no difference that I can tell in my hearing.
Really?
And I woke up at like 4:30 in the morning and my ear was just hurting so fucking bad. And I went to the bathroom and I could tell it was bleeding. I could feel it in my ear. And I just went to like wipe it out. And the prosthetic, I just hear go pink onto the counter.
Oh. Like, yeah. Were you just like tissue just sticking your finger in there? Or like,
no, it was just like a little Q-tip, not even in the hole, just like cleaning the blood out of my outer ear. Yeah, I got a picture if you want to, if you want to see it. It's fucking
gnarly.
Man. Yeah, it's That's nasty, crazy. Bro. But ever since then, man, my quality of life has skyrocketed.
It's great. Yeah, because I was going
to
say.
Have you talked to the doctors about that? And just like, hey, listen, this thing fucking fell out. And
yeah,
I feel
all
great.
Of a sudden they don't take my insurance now.
Right.
Yeah, all of a sudden they don't take my insurance now. But I had a CT done Sunday before it fell out. They're like, oh, yeah, by the way, we don't take your insurance now, and you have another tumor. You need to get that figured out. So that was basically, and this is a guy that I've been seeing since I was 8 years old.
Damn, so it's the same doctor this whole time.
Whole time. 20, 25 years. About. Yeah.
Bro.
Maybe it's time for a new doctor.
I'm seeing a new one. Yeah. I'm seeing a new one in February. Yeah. Thank fucking God, bro.
Might be the move. So how did you eventually get into the commentating?
On accident.
Really?
Yeah.
It just seems such a cool job.
So, you know, it was another thing that I've always wanted to do.
Joe Rogan.
when I was in eighth grade, if you were to tell me that I wasn't going to be a talking head on ESPN, we would have fist fought. You know?
That's what you wanted.
Yeah, of course. I was like, oh, because I was this big in sixth grade. I was like, oh, I'm going to the league. I'm going to be 5'11". I'm already running a 4.5 in the seventh grade. I got 4.4 as a freshman. I'm like, I'm hitting this last growth spurt. It's over for you bitches.
Yeah.
Never happened. You know? So I was like, all right, I'm going to go to the fucking, at least play D3 ball. I'm going to go to school for journalism. I'm going to be on ESPN. Done. Book it. Send it. You know, things didn't play out that way, obviously. Yeah. You know, but so when I was like really starting to become a part of the team at St. Charles MMA. I was helping guys kind of find fights in the gym. And because my,
what do you mean by that?
So like some of the amateur guys, they were looking for fights, or even some of the pro guys. Like,
so you'd like look up guys in other gyms and be like, hey, I think this guy, you know,
I would
whatever.
Look up other promotions in different, because we weren't fighting locally for real. I mean, there was Shamrock. NFA wasn't really around yet, and Rumble Time was done. Fight Hard was done. Like, there was really only Shamrock for a little bit of time, so we had this stable of guys, and no one was fighting. And so I went on Tapology. I just started looking up promotions.
Yeah.
Just finding them on Facebook, sending people, hey, we got this guy, this guy, this guy. You got anything for me? And they're like, yeah, you guys want to come to fucking Mount Rainier, Washington? Yeah. I'm like, yeah, we'll do it. And Roger's like, listen, motherfucker.
Yeah.
You want us to drive to Washington? Because they're not paying for a flight to go fight for free? He's like, no. Start about 4 to 5 hours away. And I was like, oh, yeah, probably a good idea. Yeah. You know? But so I did that for a while. And, you know, then these matchmakers would hit me up. Hey, do you guys have anyone else? So I started reaching out to other, you know, gym owners, Drew and Grande, Kyle Watson, all these guys. Hey, I got a guy looking for this. Do you have anyone? And this was like right at the end of Kyle really having, you know, an MMA team. So, yeah. But Drew and Grande is posting, hey, we need matchups for this, this, and this. So I'm like, all right, cool. I got these guys. And I sent it to them, sent them a couple guys from St. Charles MMA and a couple guys that I had just, you know, befriended on Facebook that I knew were fighting. And then they had a bunch of fallouts. And I just started sending Drew guys at 2 o'clock in the morning. I was up and I seen the post. I'm like, hey, check this guy, check this guy, check this guy. And then he hit me up and he was like, hey, man, you ever thought about wanting to do this? I'm like, what? He's like, matchmaking. Sure. Like, I can help for sure. I was like, I don't know what that means for real. I was like, but whatever you need, yeah, I got you. And so he was just like, hey, I got these guys. Help me match them. Come to the show. You can come for free. And I want to introduce you to Brad and Marlene. So I went and met Brad and Marlene. They brought me on as a matchmaker. And at the time, they were doing, like, Drew would do, like, the first half of the card, and then they would rotate commentary with him throughout the whole night.
And, like, different guys for different fighters.
Well, and then you would get to, like, the main event or whatever, and it'd be, like, you know, one of the Wolfsden guys, and it'd be Drew would have to leave and go corner with Mop. You okay. know? So yeah. It's like they had this, like, you know, yeah. rotating stable of people all night long. And then I can't remember who it was. Someone didn't show up. They were supposed to start the card. Drew was like, commentators. Yeah. Drew was like, you want to do it with me? I'm like, hell yeah. I was like, absolutely. I was like, I told Brad and Marlene, like, I would love to do that. And I was like, you know, if no one's going to be here, for sure.
Yeah, sign me up.
And so we did, you know, the first half of the card. And then I think Sam Panites joined me because I did, like, actually, I take that back. The first card, I only did a couple fights. I did like 4 or 5. And he's like, hey, man, you're really fucking good at this. You're just going to stay here for the next one. Like, just do the whole show. And it's like, I'll do it with you, and then we'll have someone else. And then I think Drew and I did, you know, first couple fights, and then it was me and, like, Sam Panites the rest of the night.
So how long have you been doing that?
6 years.
Okay.
6 years. Last year, did 20 shows.
Okay. Also, dude. Yeah, Brad and Marlene are great.
Yeah, you know them.
Yep.
Yeah.
So I don't work for NFA anymore, but I work for Synergy. I'm the lead commentator for them. I work for Cage of Honor down in Cape. I work for Knuckled Up, and then I do spot duty for FAC in Kansas City. So basically everyone but Shamrock. You know?
Yeah.
There's organizations. They did one show, you know, yeah. that have brought me in and stuff like that. I've done a couple in UFC Fight Pass, which was really cool.
Yeah, that's cool.
FAC is no longer on Fight Pass anymore. Which, you know, is what it is. I think Fight Pass is kind of dying anyways. It's basically just become a platform for regional MMA and that's yeah, about
I
it.
I mean, that's about it. Now they're trying to kind of do the professional jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, the FPI stuff yeah. or whatever, which, you know, they're paying guys better to do jiu-jitsu than they are in
MMA.
Like, drastically better, like 6 figures.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's
legit.
It's,
cool.
I mean, that's sweet that they're bringing that. And then you've got Craig Jones and his stuff. And
all the stuff with Flo.
Yeah. yeah.
And then, oh, I don't know if you guys have ever seen Midwest Finishers. They're based out of Chicago. I sponsored them through Hand Wraps. Next event's March 7th.
Where at?
Lombard, Illinois. 10th Planet Lombard. It's right outside of Chicago. So cool. they do a really cool thing, man. It's typically like a super fight show with a tournament built throughout it. So it's kind of, you know, broken up throughout the day. But it's usually like a, you know, 8 to 12 person, like $1,000 cash prize.
Sure.
Yeah, so I'm sponsoring the fastest submission of the day.
Cool. Okay. Hand Wraps fastest submission.
Yep. Yeah. So, and honestly, I think that's one of my most fun things to do with the business is be able to give back to some of the fighters, you know, yeah. like, and I've been helping fighters for so long. Like, even when I didn't have the money, giving guys money that I probably shouldn't have, you know, hey, going out of town, can anyone help me with sponsors? You know, Venmo someone $40 because man, I know how it is to fucking struggle out there, you know, and you're going out into a cage in your undies to go fist fight a man for basically free.
Right. Yeah,
you know? And sometimes you're paying to do it.
Oh, yeah. A lot of times you're paying to do it, especially like at the end of the year, if you're a pro and you don't fucking not on your P's and Q's with what your deductions are, like it's going to cost you a lot of money to fucking fight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it is what it is. That's
not an easy business.
No. And that's why Dana always says, this is not career, this is not a business, this is an opportunity. Right. And I think, you know, the older I get, the more I realize that, you know, like you have to use this venture to springboard into like, something else.
What Connor has done, and
well,
I mean, those guys are making big bucks anyway, just because of the promotions and the fights that they're doing, just because of the personalities they are. But ultimately, it springboard that into other businesses.
Sure. Well, and you think of just athletes in general, right? Like how many fucking college quarterbacks are now insurance salesmen in their hometown?
Right.
Right. You know, it's like,
that's what I did. I mean, not insurance, but
You know, you took this network and this little like fan base or whatever you want to call it that you built and, you know, hey, how do I monetize this? How do I keep this going? Right. Just keep it going.
How do I turn this into a business that I can, you know, make money from?
Especially
and live off
now
of.
With the NIL stuff, you know.
Man, it's gonna blow up pretty bad and it'll come back. There's gotta be some sort of regulation.
No, absolutely.
Gotta be some sort of regulation. I'm all for the fair open market, but if we have a salary cap in professional sports, we need to have an NIL cap.
No, for sure. You know, guys making millions and millions of dollars.
Carson Beck should not be making more than the first quarterback taking off the board in the NFL this year. It just shouldn't happen. Right.
Yeah.
You know, the guy who is going to be, you know, he'll be good at Miami, but you just transferred from Georgia, didn't play in the bowl game, and now you're going to Miami and you're making $5 million plus incentive. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and that just shows you, too, the difference in sports. I mean, I think the highest college baseball player was making, I think, $500,000. Mm-hmm. And you got these guys who are, you know, college football making millions. I mean, what was Schroeder Sanders? I mean, he was making what, $4 million?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yep.
So.
And now Carson Beck just broke the record.
Yeah.
But then you get guys like Travis Hunter, who took his NIL money and gave like $150,000 of it to his teammates.
That's pretty cool.
Well,
I mean, and there's Paul Skeens. So he got $250,000 from LSU, baseball player. He was the first overall pick in the draft.
Libby Dunn's wife.
Yeah, exactly. And so he took that money and I think he gave it back to the Air Force because he transferred from the Air Force to LSU and LSU paid him $250,000 in NIL money. He turned around and gave that back to the Air Force.
Is that his way of maximizing his tax deduction?
Well, but, I mean, there's that.
There's that too.
But he also donates. I think he donates now that he's made it to the big leagues. That was like $1,000 for every strikeout he had to some military charity.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
Racking up the deductions, baby.
Yeah. Yeah. Racking them up.
Yeah.
Well, Justin, you're a father as well. You had your daughter at an early age. How did that change your life?
Man, it still changes my life every day.
Truly. She's how old now?
She'll be 13 this month. Yeah.
Crazy.
She is about to become
a woman.
She is a grown ass woman.
Okay.
I mean, there is no stopping that. That's her fucking
thing. Is she still doing jiu-jitsu?
Nope. She does some kickboxing. She's a monster at volleyball.
Okay.
She is. Like, when she was 10, she was playing 15U.
Oh, wow.
And that wasn't, like, it's us. Insane. That was them asking. Like,
cool.
Hey.
And hey, she's good.
She's good.
It's insane what volleyball has become here in St. Louis. It is a massive sport.
I had no idea. And I'll tell you this. One of the most disheartening things is walking through a select girls volleyball tournament of all middle school girls, and you're the shortest person in the building. Every dad, every grandma, every girl is just like, hi.
Yeah.
Are you ever up at the Bud Dome in Green Park?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Well, we had a couple tournaments there last year, but I mean, it's insane.
Yeah.
It's insane. And there's another place. I think it's in Fenton. There's one in Fenton that's like, it's got a full like CrossFit facility in there. I think it's called Ace, maybe.
Yeah, Ace. That's
I've heard of that.
That's strictly like Ace volleyball.
So the guy who runs that, Scott something, he was an Olympic volleyball player and was a coach on the Olympic team and now runs like one of the best volleyball training facilities in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, it's massive. It's massive in that place. I think they have 14 courts.
Wow.
Yeah.
Damn.
And if I'm not mistaken, they have two sides of the building, like where there's game courts and practice courts.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Bud Dome has what, like 7 or 8 over there on that backside? Yeah. Yep. The baseball team I coach practice there Saturdays.
Yep. Oh, yep. On the right side, like split pass. Oh, there's two entrances too.
Yeah. So you've got the back entrance, where you know, you've got the restaurant and all that. You
walk up the ramp and everything.
Yeah, yep. So there's yeah. There's one indoor baseball field there, and then you come through, you've got the old side baseball and then the other baseball field, and you've got that back, almost like an L-shaped.
Yep.
With the volleyball, basketball stuff. I think they got like 7 or 8 courts back there or something like that.
I think it's 8, man. It's a madhouse, bro.
It's insane. You can't find parking there. There's nothing. Like, it is insane how competitive and how big. I didn't realize it until I started coaching again.
I had no idea. You know, like we played like rec, you know, for the city of Wentzville. And a girl that I grew up with. So my daughter went to a camp at North Point, Wentzville. And it was 5th through 8th grade. And she won MVP of the camp.
Cool.
And that I, you know, posted it online. And a girl that I grew up with reached out to me. She's like, hey, I see, you know, she got this at this camp. That was my coach in college. If your daughter was able to win this award for him, I need her on my team.
Damn.
I'm like, yeah, but, you know, she's 12. She's like, that's fine. We're 14 years. So if she thinks she can play, she can play. Like, as long as she can compete and she can handle her emotions, she's like, I want her on my team. So we played club last year, man. That was.
What are those parents like?
It's intense, bro. It's intense. And, you know, I've coached kids, you know, for a long time, but seeing a team of just young middle school girls, the emotional roller coaster that happens during a game is unlike anything I've ever seen in my life, you know?
Yeah.
Because everything's such a big feeling and moment when you're that young anyways. And like,
every point's the biggest point ever.
And it's no secret that middle school girls are the most emotional creatures on the planet.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
And like,
puberty, hormone city.
Right. And them like trying not to fight with each other, but still being mad and then like not taking account of it's just so funny to watch. That to me was just as fun to watch as the games.
Do you think the jiu-jitsu and kickboxing has helped your daughter with like regulating those emotions and those feelings, or is she still part of that?
She still deals with it because
obviously going
through changes. And she did jiu-jitsu and kickboxing for like 3 years pretty consistently and then got off it for a while and was doing a bunch of other stuff. And, you know, she never really took it that seriously. It was just something that she did. So like,
it was something you did. So
yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And like, I mean, she's grown up in the gym. She's 13 now. She's been in the gym since she was 5, you know, but she understands, she's got a good understanding of that. Hey, when it's time to clock in, it's time to clock in. Cause like she has the switch, you know, a lot of kids don't have that,
right.
You know, especially that early, like kind of have to find it, you know, but she's a dog.
That's awesome.
She's a dog, man.
Yeah.
But is that something that she's wanting to take further? And I mean, I know it's a young age, but
she's, and I don't know if it's her thing or maybe like this generation of kids, but like, you know, the second things start to get like hard or too serious, that's when she sees a little bit of pushback. Like if I tell her, hey, like you're going to play on this team, but you have to study film. You have to remember your plays and you have to do this. Like it becomes a little overwhelming for her. You know,
she's got 13, so much freedom playing against 15 year olds. It's a little different.
But. Sure. But she's got so much freedom, you know, in her normal life that like these constraints you put on her to do these things that she enjoys. Like, I don't know. I do think it's more of like a kids in this generation thing than just her specifically. Cause I see it all the time, you know, with kids that I coach, but it's a weird water to navigate because I've been a coach for so long and I'm trying to coach her on how to be a better athlete and, you know, how to do the right things to achieve your goals in whatever sport, right? But trying to coach her specifically for volleyball, like, I got to back off.
I was going
to
say, you know, it's not
my forte, not but forte. I know that, hey, if you want to get better and you're playing the most important position on the team, you have to understand what everyone's responsibilities are.
Right.
So, like, you know, me as a coach, like, instinctively, like, when we're on the way home from practice, I'm like, okay, what'd you learn today? I don't know. Dad, I don't want to talk about it. What are we doing here?
We're getting better.
You know, we're trying to get better.
For sure.
You know, so She really, really loves it. I don't think she likes the pressure of it, though, you know, but pressure's a privilege. You got to understand that. Some people, it takes them longer to understand that.
Is it hard to turn off the coach mode and go to dad aid?
It's almost impossible.
Yeah.
Almost fucking impossible. Like, even with my wife, like, if we go to work out together, like, I just have to spend the whole time, like, I'm her husband right now. I don't need to coach her on her form on everything and do this. I'm like, you need to go, you know?
Yeah, it's for like, sure.
But it's just been so much of my life, right. Like, you know, trying to
yeah, you just
take
want
to the
help,
hat off.
But you're like, it's like, yeah. It's not what they want right now. Right. You know?
That's why my boys with baseball, I don't know if I will be able, I don't know, separate that. I don't know if I could coach them.
Yeah.
It'd be different if it was something that we were doing together. You know,
if she's like, doing jiu-jitsu or you were doing volleyball.
Right. Yeah. If I was like a, you know, volleyball player, or I played in high school and college or, you know, whatever, like then I have a, you know, a little more of a leg to stand on.
I was going
to
say, we don't have the build for that sport, buddy.
No. Libero. So, and that's what she plays. She plays libero, but like, and this is how psycho I got. It's like the average height for a D1 female libero is like 5'6" and a half, 5'7". I don't think she's getting to that. Shit, I'm not. So, yeah. You know? So, but I just I want her to understand that like it's okay to have responsibilities for the things that you enjoy, because when you get older, you're gonna have responsibilities for things that you fucking hate, and you still got to do them.
Yeah,
preach.
You know,
right?
And I think that's the probably the hardest thing is like, look, man, would you rather learn responsibility by doing something you love, or all these things you hate? Because I can teach you responsibility by making sure, hey, you vacuum your room, you do your chores, you do all your laundry, and the dishes are done, and all this other shit. But like, it's not fun. It's not fun. It's gonna just make you resent these things that no matter what you have to do, regardless. You know, if I have to force you to do these things, but I just think as part of like navigating the waters as a parent coach, like, there's not enough books in the world that'll help you prepare for a seventh grade girl. You know, let alone one where, you know, you guys are so much alike anyways, like in tendencies and who you are. And I'm just trying to be the coach that I needed when I was that age, you know, like, hey, make sure you're watching your film. Hey, make sure you're studying your rotations. Like, hey, spend one day this week and watch one full volleyball game from start to finish at the college level. Like, those are the things that I was trying to get her to do, you know, and it's like, I don't know, maybe that is too much for a seventh grader, but. Like I said, pressure is a privilege, right? Like, I'd tell her all the time, I'd never ask you to do anything that I don't believe you're capable of. I'm not asking you to run 10 miles every day right now, cold turkey, you know? Like, could you do that eventually? Maybe you could, but maybe that's not who you are. But I know that you can study the rotations that you were given, watch one college volleyball game a week, and make sure you know your teammates' responsibilities, you know?
It's doable.
It's pretty doable, you know?
Yeah.
Especially if you're going to be team captain and start at libero.
Yeah.
It's mandatory, actually.
Yeah,
you know, if you want to keep your spot. I told her, I said, if you just want to be on the team, that's fine. But we're not going to play club. You know, because being a part of the team is so important for any kid. But if you're not going to handle the responsibility that it takes to be on this type of team, well, we'll put you on a different one. You know? And so she's starting to understand that now, because she started off super hot in the season and tried to ride on talent, and I bit her in the ass. And she ended up getting benched halfway through because she wasn't studying rotations and it was showing up in games. And so, it was, you know, many times you tell anyone, especially a kid, something, they don't know it until they know it, right? Or they feel it, you know? So I'm sure you see that all the time with your guys, right?
Yeah. I mean, as a coach, obviously they're, you know, and this is something that I've always, I look back at it like the way, like, how am I going to handle it when my kids are getting into sports? Which Connor, I mean, they're already getting into sports, but Connor starts playing baseball this summer. And, you know, I always told my ex-wife, I'm like, I really don't want to coach him. Well, it's a kids from school. They started this team, and Melissa just out of nowhere, like, oh, yeah, Pat played professional baseball. He would love to help. And I'm like, check with me first on that one. No, I would not love to help. I mean, could I help? Absolutely. But at the same time, like, the best thing that happened for me was that my parents didn't know jack shit about baseball.
Right.
And they were just there to support me. They got me with the coaches that I needed to get better. And they put all the trust in them and let them do it. And they asked me, they wanted to know what my goals were. So I told them my goals, and all they would do is just ask me, do you still want it? And I would have to answer that myself. And it was yes or no. Like, no, then, okay, well, then we're done paying for lessons. We're done doing all this shit and putting you on these teams. If it was yes, then I had to answer myself, like, why the fuck am I being lazy right now?
Right.
So that was kind of how my parents handled all of that. And that's the approach that I think I'm going to take with the boys, but not, you know, in terms of, you know, because putting that responsibility on myself, when somebody tries to tell me to do something, what am I going to do? Probably the opposite, you know? So it was put onto me early on from an early age, I guess, middle school, going into high school. If that's what I wanted to do, and I knew that's what I wanted to do at that point, I knew that I wanted to take this further, because I was developing heads and tails above my peers. Mm-hmm. And so I knew that, like, there was a chance at it, and my coaches encouraged it, and my parents were just kind of sat back. Where on the opposite side of it was hockey, which I was really, really good at hockey. My dad coached all of the things. He knew all the things about hockey. And instead of, like, just supporting me through it, he'd be coaching me after games, and I just got burnt out on it.
It's gotta be miserable.
And yeah, and I was just like, I don't want to, like, your daughter was like, I don't want to talk about this, Dad.
Yeah.
I was the same way. I'm like, yeah, I know I had a shitty game, Dad. I don't need you to sit here and tell me I had a shitty game.
Right.
And so for me, it was, I got burnt out on hockey really, really quickly. Not to mention I had 6 concussions, but that's a whole nother.
No, well,
that's
a whole six, story. Six on record.
Six on record. Right, six, exactly. On record. Six on record. But I mean, that was the whole thing. And that's kind of why, like, everybody asked, like, oh, are you going to get your kids into baseball? I mean, yeah, sure. Would I love for them to play baseball? Absolutely. But am I going to push it? No. Am I going to coach them? I'm sure at one point, maybe. You know, if I'm sitting there watching and I'm seeing these dads running around teaching them some stupid ass shit, like, I'll come probably go
so,
out
so
there.
So it sounds like you're going to start coaching soon.
We'll see. But that's the thing. They like, Connor loves it. My oldest loves it. My youngest, not so much. He's a little bit, you know, he's more of my artsy, craftsy,
sure,
like hands-on building stuff type stuff. So I, like I said, I want to get him into things that he enjoys. I don't want to put him into sports just because Connor's in sports and kind of develop that, you know, pressure on my youngest one. You know, pressure is a privilege, but if he's not going to enjoy what he's doing, then I don't want him to do it.
Right.
So, but yeah, I mean, that was my biggest takeaway and things from the way my parents handled it. Now, you know, parents didn't do a lot of things right, but that was one of the things that they did do right.
Sure.
And I appreciate everything about the way they handled that, because I probably wouldn't have made it as far as I did with baseball had they have done it a different way. Because that was like the one thing that I was passionate about that they didn't know shit about. And they were just like, cool, we're just going to be here and cheer you on as a fan. Like, no matter how bad I did, like, I'd go 0-for-4 at the plate and strike out all 4 times. But my mom would be like, oh, well, you hit that one down the line. I'm like, yeah, Mom, that was a foul ball. She's like, but it was really good.
But you touched it.
It was really good.
Yeah, I heard it come off the bat.
Yeah, it sounded good off the bat.
Right. It was really good. But like, or I'd go out and get shelled on the mound. And she'd be like, yeah, but you were throwing really hard. And you and all. I'm like, yeah, Mom, but I also gave up 7 runs. 5 of which were home runs. I'm like, but yeah, so
well, yeah. It's got to be coming in hard to have exit velo like right, that.
Exactly. You know? But like, exactly. That's the kind of shit that they would say. So no, I mean, but that was like the biggest thing for me and why I think I was able to succeed and move past. And that's, you know, parents ask me all the time, like, and that's what I tell them. Like just from my own perspective is, let me do the coaching. Let me handle that. You be the parent and you talk to them and just support them.
Right.
And find out what their goals are and encourage their goals. Don't try and force the goals, because then they're just going to do the opposite of what it is. For example, like your daughter, you're going to tell her to go watch video. You think she's going to watch video?
No, probably she's watching TikTok.
Yeah, exactly. No. You know, tell her to find some TikTok videos on volleyball.
So there's a guy that I follow. His wrestling channel is Pursuit Wrestling. He's Bracken Myers. He wrestled at Ohio State. And he's like, you know, why would I fight what is like so over consuming everyone? He's like, so I give my guys TikToks to watch.
Yeah. That's like, why.
This is part of practice.
Yeah, I send my players videos from TikTok. There's so much, like, there's so many good things out there on TikTok. Obviously, so many bad things and distractions, but
that's anything on the internet.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, there's videos that I send my guys and quotes and shit like that from professional athletes and stuff that we have a group chat with all my players and I'll just forward it off to them and I hope they watch it. And hopefully that starts feeding into their feed and they start seeing more and more and more of that stuff.
Right. But, and Bracken told me that he's like, that's really the reason he started. It's like, okay, well, I can infiltrate their minds while I'm not even there about wrestling.
Exactly.
because he makes it mandatory
that they watch TikTok,
that you have to watch these TikToks because it's going to be stuff that we're doing either in practice this week or this month or something that happened in an event over the weekend.
That's smart.
I like that. That is
like, he's like, yeah, I mean, if you're going to give a kid homework, you got to give them some at least incentive to do it. And right. Everyone, it's like, okay, there's a reason for doing this. It's not just because it's, oh, we're taking a test on Monday. It's like, right. No, like Jordan Burroughs did this over the weekend. We're going to do this in class today. Please make sure you watch this. And if you don't, you're going to be behind. And right. Then you're going to give, someone wants to get their ass whooped in practice on Monday.
Right. Yeah,
you exactly. Know, if everyone's doing, you know, a head fakes to a sweep single and you don't know what's going on, it's right. Gonna be a bad day for silly. Your practice.
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly.
Because like you can structure your week without even having to really like put up it on the white. This is what we're doing today. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah. Like
just do it all through their phone.
Well, so much of sales, coaching, business is about getting onto whoever you're dealing with their level. Right? Like, how do you fucking infiltrate the mind of a child? You know, how do you get on the same level as a kid, you know, and still get the message across? So you can't just like lean down and, yeah. You know, look at them. It's like, okay, well, what are kids doing these days? How do I infiltrate that and, you know, try to make it at least more positive for them, you know, beneficial to everyone involved, you know? It's, to me, it just seems so simple and such a, like an easy idea. It's like, why the fuck didn't I think of that?
Oh, right. Makes complete sense.
All the best ideas are usually the most simple, like A to B with, you know, everyone's like, well, if I go to Z first and then try to complicate back. It. Yeah.
Just you know, start at like, the end and work my way back.
Yeah. Let's reverse engineer everything.
Yeah. Well, Justin, this was really fun, man. Yeah. We really appreciate having you on.
Of course, man. Thank
we'll definitely
you
do this again.
But, for sure.
Before yeah, we get know. You out of here.
We always got one last question that we end the show with. Okay. It's called the Tombstone Game. Yep. Here lies Justin. What's it say on your tombstone?
Did what he could.
Perfect.
Perfect. Simple. Easy. Yeah.
Did what he could.
Love it.
I think that would be it.
Great.
Awesome, man.
Awesome. Well, thank you guys so much for tuning into the show. Please click that subscribe button if you haven't already. That would help us out a ton. Click that like button as well. Comment what you thought about the episode, and we will see you next time.